Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's October the 24th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain markets with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, it's all about the Farm Bill and the Senate. Dave Dickey is working right now to bring us up to date on the most recent happenings on Capitol Hill. And speaking of capital, we'll tackle the other definition of that word today, too. So far this week, we've been asking our analysts how they view an article Gary Schnittke penned. You can see it on the FarmDoc website that compared the value of farmland to its capitalized value. I'll have complete details of the article later in this program. And on the subject of later, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us just after the bottom of the hour. It all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat lost 30 cents, the limit lower at $8.11. March contract down 30 at 831.5, and the May futures at 789.25, down 30 for the day. July wheat of next year, 21.75 cents, the loss at $6.57.75. December corn futures, 356.5, down 4.5. The March contract at 373.5, down 4.25. And the May futures down a nickel at $3.83.5. December corn next year at 404.5, down 5.5 cents for the day. November soybean futures 5.5 lower at 976.25. January is at 993.75, down 5.25. And the March, $10.08, down 4.5. November of next year, down 7 at 954 in the bean pit. December soybean meal at 274, down 260. January futures at 275.90, down $3.10. December bean oil futures, 6 cents the gain at $40.48. January futures at 40.92 finished unchanged. October live cattle at the Mercantile Exchange, down 85 cents at 95.12.5 a hundredweight. December futures at 95.87.5. down $1.35. October feeder cattle 111.10, down 25 cents. In November's at 110.50, down 60. December lean hog futures at 53.35, down 92.5. February futures at 62.35, down 57.5. And the April lean hogs down $1.07.5 at $66.10 a hundredweight. From the outside markets, nearby December crude oil futures $87. The current trade $1.73 higher. The U.S. dollar at 77.56 is up 0.3031. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,582 is just about 93 points lower at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd. Beautiful day here in East Central Illinois.
It is a gorgeous day, but a rough day in Chicago if you wanted to own wheat, the second big down day in a row.
You know, a couple of things. You know, definitely the trend is lower. There was a story about the Russians weren't going to put a export tax on exporting wheat out of Russia. The Ukraine basically helped put a stopper to that by basically saying they took their surcharge off. Australian wheat weather is good. The early wheat yields are better than expected, and the quality is good. And also with this additional rainfall, it does stabilize their feed grains, oil seeds, pastures, livestock industry. And at the same time, you know, there is a ton of soft red winter wheat being planted here in the Midwest. And our general feeling is that it's also encouraged wheat plantings in basically the northern hemisphere. And wheat harvest will obviously turn out to be pretty good in Argentina. So it's all said and done. My opinion was the prices got too high and now we are starting to see some evidence of a price sell-off in the wheat crop.
And then on the yesterday, not much technical damage really done, but depending on how you look at the marketplace today, there's a gap lower in the continuous wheat chart now, and it's setting up maybe on the weekly chart for an outside down week. Do you think that we'll have a top in this market fairly shortly?
Well, my hunch is that, yes, we will. And number two, providing we don't have a major surprise as far as weather in the western wheat growing area of the U.S. or something like that. But as a general rule, price did on the rally did do a lot of discovery on the upside, and it seems like some of the feed grain issues have been settled in Europe. They also did away with a set-aside program, and there's going to be a ton of acreage there. Our general impression is that I guess the system worked, but it took a pretty high price to basically settle just how high the wheat needed to go.
I guess the question really was, would we have a confirmed top in the marketplace rather than will we have a top in the marketplace?
Well, you know, this is the commodity world, and it's a new surprise every day. But my humble opinion is that, yes, we've seen the top.
Okay, and then maybe we should talk about next year's wheat and what farmers who have put wheat acres in the ground or new wheat acres in the ground ought to be doing. This is the first day that that commodity actually, or that futures month, July, has really started to fold under the pressure from the falling nearby contracts.
You know, I mentioned in the office here that, you know, ministers, teachers, lawyers, politicians like to talk about subject areas that they like to talk about, and when they get asked questions, about 80% of my orders today were in the wheat market, and of course I talked about other commodities, but they wanted to trade wheat. And what we're finding here is that the farmer is basically lining up credit, and he wants to do his own hedging and his own basic discovery of which market he wants to sell to. And one of the three things that's causing this trend is the wide basis levels, because they feel the basis levels are too wide to actually sell it at their local elevators, and they basically feel that they can do a better job of actually hedging the market and basically finding the and discovering which market they should go to at harvest time next year. Also, if the prices get too cheap, they can always take a profit and go to the bank. The big factor here is that there's three ways. The Chicago Board of Trade has this wonderful options program. Also, mini contracts, 1,000 bushels, and, of course, 5,000 bushel lots. And basically, we're finding the farmer is very efficient and using all three tools as a hedging deal. And there has been a ton of wheat sold in the marketplace, and not only with their local elevators, but also in the futures market with basically margined accounts.
Now, in the face of these double-digit losses, 60 cents over the past couple of days in the nearby wheat contracts, corn has actually managed to hold really quite strong.
Yeah. You know, generally, we are going to be looking at a couple things in the corn market. The government has done a very interesting job of really telling the world that the demand is a little better than what some of the private analysts are talking about. And, of course, some of that's in the ethanol area, industrial usage, not only this crop year, but next crop year. When a very popular market firm in Iowa this morning basically said that, you know, there is this trend in which the crop usually gets smaller after a smaller production size in October. In other words, the November report should be smaller. But the exit yields that we're getting in Iowa and parts of the Midwest, as I talked to one grain train loader today, is there's just too much corn, and corn is piling up for this crop to be smaller, and it's in his opinion it's larger. And as a result of that, we are very close to a technical trend change at 355 basis the December, and we got very close to that. Also, the stock market got very weak late about 1 o'clock, and I think that also influenced why corn, soybeans got weaker. But as you mentioned, the tug down in wheat also hurt corn prices.
And December contract, for those keeping track, finished the day at 356.5. They did have a low at 355.75. Need, in your opinion, probably to push on through that to really start.
Yeah, we're not looking at I'm not looking at anything like a 25 or 30 cent dip in here. But at the same time, the prices seem to be weak in here. We still have a conservative number of, I think, about 40%, 35 to 40% of the harvest yet to put to bed. And the world economy does seem to be slowing down some. And these are all factors why corn sold off today.
Now, December corn of next year at 404.5 under settlement price down 5.5. I think most of our analysts, and you can tell me whether you agree with this or not, believe that $4 futures markets probably ought to be sold for next year in some portion. Would you agree with that, and to what level if you do?
Yeah, you know, basically up in that 420 area, we saw this new push to sell corn, and we did see a lot of people take advantage of it. Same thing in the wheat. A lot of people are actually going and establishing, you know, more of a hedge account because of the wide basis and also the ability to discover the best market at the time of harvest. And we're seeing that trend. Another factor here is that when I'm out in the country and visiting, some of these corn yields, particularly these triple-stack yields, just blew everything away. And it's our opinion is that in some of these good-producing counties, we're going to actually see people actually go back to the corn because that's where the home runs as far as prices and profitability came in the marketplace. And so people have a tendency to go back, and if you hit a home run, let's go back and try to hit that home run again next year. And as you mentioned, by locking the price in, that's one thing. And also the other thing is putting all the necessary inputs into that productive factory to get the best yield. So we are seeing the combination of all three at work here, and so it looks like to me that corn is going to be still a very popular commodity to plant in 2008.
Paul, we appreciate you being with us, Paul.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
Hey, you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City about the agricultural weather forecast for the two-state region, the Midwest, the nation, and the globe right now. Here's what AM 580's Ed Kieser says it will be like across Illinois and Indiana. In the north tonight, mostly clear skies. In central sections, partly clear. In the south, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers. Those will be most numerous after midnight. Lows will range from 32 in far northwestern Illinois to 47 in the south and in Chicago. Tomorrow, Ed says, in the north, partly to mostly sunny. In central sections, increasing cloudiness, scattered showers arriving during the afternoon. In the south, cloudy, some showers. Highs will range from 54 in southern Illinois to near 60 in many northern and eastern locations. Scattered showers will continue right on through Friday and Saturday as an upper air low pressure system meanders across the Midwest. Dry weather, though, expected Sunday and early next week. And that dry weather may extend right on through the rest of next week. Dave Dickey is here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the Senate Agriculture Committee has begun markup of the 2007 Farm Bill. Senators spent much of the morning in opening statements criticizing Ag Chairman Tom Harkin's average crop revenue program. The optional plan would provide producers subsidies when statewide revenue is less than a guaranteed level. At least four GOP senators singled out the plan as unworkable. Kansas Republican Pat Roberts says in a trial run, applying ACR to the nine worst crop years in Kansas showed the plan triggered payments only twice. committee members delayed votes on two major reforms until the farm bill reaches the Senate floor, a $250,000 per farm per year hard cap on subsidy payments, and a plan that would scrap traditional supports and give producers a free insurance policy to guarantee 85% of their usual revenue. There are rumors swirling around Capitol Hill that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid will support efforts to attach the Ag Jobs Bill to the Farm Bill on the Senate floor. The Ag Jobs Bill has created a lot of division among legislators. It would overhaul the way migrant farm workers are hired. U.S. Chief Agriculture Negotiator Joe Glauber says he is cautiously optimistic at recent developments at World Trade Talks. Glauber says success in the Doha round depends on the outcome of talks next month that will focus on sensitive products, those agricultural commodities that will be permitted to receive additional protections from foreign competition. Glauber says what could ultimately torpedo the Doha round, however, is a lack of progress on non-agricultural market access negotiations. Glauber says NAMA issues are, in his words, a lot more problematic right now than the agricultural talks. Senate Republicans are still divided on whether to proceed with the Energy Bill Conference Committee. Among Senate GOP lawmakers, there is disagreement over what to do with a House energy bill measure that would repeal a number of tax breaks currently enjoyed by the U.S. gas and oil industry and spend the savings on renewable fuels. By voice vote, the House has passed a bill that would regulate the production, sale, and purchase of explosive chemicals like those used in the Oklahoma City bombing. Mississippi Congressman Bernie Thompson.
H.R. 1680 requires the sales of ammonium nitrate to be limited to purchasers who register in advance and that name, address, telephone number, and registration number of the purchaser be recorded.
Anyone who owns or purchases ammonium nitrate, a common ingredient in agricultural fertilizers, would have to register with the Homeland Security Department. California Congressman Dan Lundgren says the bill ensures the legitimate use of fertilizer.
So that ammonium nitrate is available for legitimate use, but does not fall into terrorist hands. A system that keeps us safe, but does not burden farmers.
The Homeland Security Department could issue fines of up to $50,000 if someone sells the chemical without first registering. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Well, up next, we've been talking about it all week, and I thought you might want to hear a review of U of I Ag economist Gary Schnitke's article on the price of farmland compared to its capitalized value. As you'll hear, the last time the price of land exceeded the capitalized value by so much occurred a few years before the farm crisis of the mid-1980s. Let's get a definition out of the way first. Capitalized value is equal to cash rent divided by an interest rate and represents the earnings potential from an acre of farmland. Gary Schnitke at the University of Illinois has just released a study on how the current high price of farmland and its ability to earn income compares to historical data. It can be found on the FarmDoc website at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. Now here's how the price of Illinois farmland has laid out since 1970. Farmland prices increased from $490 an acre in 1970 to $2,023 an acre in 1982.
and then prices decreased, reaching a low of $1,149 an acre in 1987. Since 87, farmland prices have increased each year. The average yearly increase since 1987 has been 7%, but the last few years have been higher than that and look a lot like the late 1970s and the early 1980s. In fact, between 2003 and 2007, Illinois farmland prices increased by $1,900 an acre, or 78%, says U of I's Gary Schnittke. A question, therefore, exists whether the current period of high farmland prices relative to capitalized values will mirror the 1977 through 1981 period, and if farmland prices will decline in the future. While farmland prices may decline, says Schnittke, there are two differences between the current period and 1977 through 1985. First, much of the decline in capitalized values between 77 and 81 was associated with the higher interest rates. Interest rates increased from 7.42% in 77 to 13.92% in 81. It's doubtful that the interest rates will show similar increases in future years. Secondly, cash rents are expected to increase over the next several years because of the robust agricultural returns. Rising cash rents will increase capitalized values, causing the difference between farmland prices and capitalized values to narrow. However, the cash rents need to increase by large margins before farmland prices are only 7% higher than the capitalized values. That's the relationship between 1987 through 2004. Now, in 2007, the Illinois farmland price is $4,330 an acre on average across the state, with an interest rate of 5%, and the cash rent is $141 an acre. Given that farmland prices and interest rates do not change, cash rents need to increase, said Gary Schnittke, by $62 an acre to $203 an acre before farmland prices are only 7% higher than the capitalized values. In the longer term, some questions exist whether farmland prices in Illinois can maintain their current levels relative to the capitalized values. Either a new relationship between farmland prices and capitalized values exist where farmland prices exceed those values by a large margin, possibly caused by more urban demand for farmland, or growth in farmland prices must slow so that capitalized values can catch up with those prices. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. Time to take a look at our cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
Well, how are things faring in your part of the world?
Well, we've been pretty wet here. We had, pretty consistently an inch to an inch and two-tenths here day before yesterday. We got a little sunshine today. We had 2.5 to 3.5 inches last week, but believe it or not, we were so dry that I have talked to a couple of guys that are going to try and get back out this afternoon, but I think that's going to be a rarity. I think there's more that aren't than there are that are.
Last week, you were really quite grateful for the time. You had a couple of trains that you were able to load out. I would guess that you continue to do that, and now you're ready to take more grain.
We're ready to take more grain, and we're dumping a lot today. They're still cleaning out some bins so they can make room when they do get back to the field. I'd say we've probably got 15 to 20% of the crop still out there. Most of it's going to have to come to town, so we're still going to struggle with space, but you know, we needed the respite last week, but gee whiz, you know, we're ready to get this thing out of the way now, and we're going to have rain again tomorrow night, Friday and Saturday, so we're going to have some downtime whether we like it or not, I think, Todd.
Has that given the basis the chance to firm up a bit?
The basis is firming up pretty rapidly, and even since we just set markets this afternoon, we understand that it's that offers are slim to come by, that the basis is getting much better in corn and beans both, so farmers are buttoning this crop up. They're not going to part with it. So I think we'll see a pretty strong basis until they decide to part, whether that could be January.
Okay, and your bids for the day?
Cash corn today is 324, beans are 916, and new crop wheat is 573.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd.
And that is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Wednesday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Time now for a look at your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. One Western Indiana lawmaker says he's all for Governor Mitch Daniels' plan to restructure property taxes. Among the package of proposals is a constitutional amendment that would cap the amount of property tax on a property. Republican Senator Phil Boots of Crawfordsville says he thinks shifting some of the government funding burden from property taxes to a 1 cent increase in Indiana's sales tax is a fair idea. The plan also calls for the state to assume responsibility for most school operating and transportation costs, as well as child welfare expenses. Boots says he'd rather see local school districts controlling operations funding, but spending on capital projects helped lead to significant property tax hikes in the first place. Illinois' new public health director says he hopes the rest of the country will follow the model that Illinois has established in screening and treating breast cancer. Damon Arnold was in Champaign today promoting the expansion of the state's breast and cervical cancer program. More than 260,000 uninsured women are now eligible for those screenings. A doctor with Champaign's Francis Nelson Health Center says in the past, the program's income guidelines kept many women from receiving pap smears and mammograms. Emergency officials say a suburban Chicago ambulance crew got lost while rushing a dying Chicago marathon runner to the hospital. Officials in Chicago say the crew didn't ask dispatchers for directions, but the fire chief in Niles says the crew got no response when it radioed for help. Indiana Senator Richard Lugar wants subsidies removed from a new 5-year farm bill, but he'll wait until the legislation reaches the Senate floor in hopes that he finds more support there than in committee. Lugar says the Agriculture Committee mostly consists of lawmakers who favor continuing subsidies, but the full 100-member Senate might be more receptive to his view. Lugar and New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg have introduced rival legislation to the farm bill. Under Lugar's approach, all farmers would receive government-paid insurance. Barack Obama has won over Iowa's butter cow lady. Norma Duffy Lyon is backing the Illinois Democrats' bid for the presidential nomination, and she's recorded a radio ad for him. Lyon carved a full-size dairy cow out of butter at the Iowa State Fair for nearly 5 decades. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather here in the Midwest.
Well, it looks like we're going to finally get out from underneath the influence of this upper-level low-pressure system that's been plaguing the region this week, but it's still 2 days away. The system will come back and haunt us here tomorrow into Friday with more shower and thunderstorm activity expected across the region, and that's going to keep us out of the field for just a little while longer. But we are looking at a drier biased environment coming up here for the weekend and next week. It will be a slow transition back to favorable harvest conditions just simply because our temperatures are not going to be anywhere near as warm as they were a week or so ago. But we are going to see a decline in precipitation, and that is the best news that I can give anybody here today. We are looking at a few very weak shots of cool air coming across the upper portions of the Midwest as we go through the weekend and into early next week, and each one of those little shots of energy will trigger a few showers. Most of this will be Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the Great Lakes region, with the rest of the Midwest most likely staying dry. So there will be an opportunity for some field work, but as you know, there's a lot of water out there standing on the fields, and it's probably going to sit there for a bit longer before we can see any kind of improvement. So field work will be slow to resume, but we are at least headed into a drier weather bias.
And by your account, how long do you think farmers in the western Corn Belt and parts of Iowa, where they really haven't gotten back into the field, how long will they be out, and when might they get a good start at it again?
I think they'll probably be out for another 4 days at least, and some areas maybe a little bit longer. There's quite a bit of water standing around in some areas. Our temperatures just aren't going to be real balmy for a while, so it's going to be kind of difficult to get out there and become aggressive with our field work. The problem is about the time we start to firm up that ground sufficiently, we're probably going to run into a little more precipitation again that will set them back a bit. So I don't look for an aggressive attack on field work in the Western Corn Belt for a while, but most of these storm systems that are going to impact the region will not be major precipitation producers, at least for a week. So there ought to be at least a little progress made eventually.
There were some production problems in South America to the start of the planting season, at least in parts of Brazil. Have they fixed themselves at this point?
Well, let's say they are fixing themselves at this point. We are seeing an increase in shower and thunderstorm activity across Brazil's crop country. The distribution of the rain so far hasn't been real even, but we are seeing an improving trend, and I think we're going to continue in that trend for the next week to 10 days. So eventually it will be a better environment for more aggressive field progress. This La Nina that we're under the influence of right now is really messing up the weather pattern in Brazil for a bit now, and we'll probably see this continue for a little while longer. But I don't think we're going to see any extended periods of dry weather like we had there for quite a little while, again for a while.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us
today. All right, have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that is today's Closing Market Report. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.